RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 169 with guests Paul Randall and Kim Tripp, recorded Friday, July 16th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Welcome to Run As Radio. With me, as usual, although it's been tough lately, my good friend Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, it's been a little crazy lately, but here I am, and here we go.
And you've been traveling hither and yon. And hey, it's my birthday today.
Really?
Happy birthday.
Oh my God! What the hell are you doing recording with us?
I didn't even get a chance to volunteer it on my own.
Come on, you drive halfway down, we'll drive halfway up, we'll meet in Bellingham.
Oh, man, you guys are crazy. So with us today, my
friends. It's really your birthday today?
It's really my birthday today, yes.
So you're what, 49?
40-something, yeah. So if you haven't figured out by now, we've got Paul Randall and Kim Tripp with us today, and I'm sure it's going to be unruly because it doesn't work any other way.
Hey, your birthday online says it's July 18th.
Yeah, I know. I lie on Facebook. Suck
it
down.
Oh, really? Yeah. Don't you dare say happy birthday on Facebook.
I've gotten lots of happy birthday greetings, but you know, my real friends know when my birthday is.
Oh, so we find out on Run As?
There you go. There
nice.
You go.
Real nice, Richard.
Well, at least it was right on my calendar. So
there you
that's
go.
Good.
So, guys, what are we talking about today? We've done lots of SQL topics, but I think you've got something weird you got in mind.
Well, you know, there was a really good T-SQL Tuesday, and we should probably even take a second to explain what that is. I haven't been heavily involved. I'm not as online as I suppose I could be, just the amount of time that we...
So should I explain them?
Yeah, you should explain. Go ahead.
All right, so the SQL community is really very vibrant on the internet, and one of the MVPs...
It's actually really impressive.
It is. It's really cool. One of the MVPs is a guy called Adam Mechanic. He came up with this idea of once a month, the second Tuesday of the month, somebody picks a topic, and everybody who wants to contribute does a blog post around that topic. And, you know, it can be all kinds of weird twists and so on. And it's been going for about 6 months or so. And the one that was just this Tuesday just passed on the, I guess, the 14th, was how do you learn, how do you teach?
Right.
Interesting.
So that's what Kimberly thought would be a good topic for a Run As. And here we all are.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea is as a person in the SQL profession, kind of, you know, how do you continue your education? What do you use for resources? You know, how do you best learn those things? And then as trainers as well, one of the things they were asking is, you know, how do we teach and what are the things that we do to present? And it was a really interesting, you know, kind of T-SQL Tuesday with a lot of really great comments. And people can easily find the T-SQL Tuesday blog post by going to, like, Paul's blog, and then there's an icon for T-SQL Tuesday, and that kind of links back. And usually the person that starts the T-SQL Tuesday also does a roundup, which then says, you know, here's all the people and all the blog posts that were done around this topic this Tuesday, and, you know, gives all the links. So, I mean, it's the SQL community, I've always been impressed. I've told a lot of people this that kind of say, you know, oh, I'm not that interested in Twitter, and it doesn't seem like it would be interesting at all to hear about people walking their dog or whatever. And I kind of agree with that, that I don't want to hear about people blowing their nose or walking their dog. But the SQL community...
It's dangerous to do it at the same time.
Yeah. But the SQL community is really impressive as far as Twitter and Facebook even and blogs. And I mean, it's amazing how many really talented folks are blogging regularly and even tweeting and responding to people's tweets and stuff. And then Paul started this SQL help hashtag.
No, that wasn't me. It was Brent Ozar.
Oh, I thought you did that. But I know you've been involved in that quite a bit. But there's a hashtag on Twitter of SQL help. And if you can explain your problem in 140 characters plus the hashtag, then, you know, in some cases, you'll get some really great and fairly quick responses, because there's almost always coverage, you know, around the world with time zones and all the folks that participate. So, you know, like I said, it's a really amazing, active online community.
That's cool.
So that's what we thought might be a good topic today, is to kind of continue that discussion.
Right. And you guys have done it all, right? I mean, you train regularly. You do you're part of the master certification. You do an endless number of conference sessions. You know, which one's good for what?
Well, okay. You know, I definitely have some opinions. I've actually done some blog posts.
Really?
Yeah, really. Me, I have opinions.
Shocking.
No, I actually did a blog post on, you know, conferences, SQL Saturdays, training events, like what does each one give you? And I think it's really interesting, because I think one of the reasons why some people fail in terms of getting the most out of some of these events is they go to these events with totally the wrong idea in what they're going to get out of it. They, you know, and then they're disappointed. And I think sometimes it's the matter of they haven't even really read the abstracts. They haven't planned out their conference experience until they get there. And then they go to some, you know, great place like Vegas, which I'm not going to complain about. I actually really enjoy Vegas. But, you know, some people will be out drinking and partying and gambling till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they'll have a real hard time engaging in some of the sessions.
Yeah, we've seen more than a few heads nodding in a 9 a.m. session in Vegas.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and I totally get the whole want to go to Vegas and have fun. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy.
It's the only reason to do it.
It's one of the reasons why I really enjoy the conferences in Vegas. But one of the things that Paul and I always try to do is tack on, you know, a day or so after the event is over, or even go to the event, let's say a day or two early, and we'll have our fun. We'll go out to a few shows. We'll, you know, have a really nice meal at the beginning or the end. In fact, we've done that with you, Richard.
I'm glad you have, yes.
You know, I love that. I love those locations, and I love the fun in general of going to Vegas because of the shows and the meals and the nightlife. But, you know, long story short is, if you're at a conference, one of the main things you're there to do is try to absorb as much as possible.
Right.
And going out and drinking till 3 o'clock in the morning is really not conducive to, you know, being able to grasp all of the, in many cases, very technical topics that are starting at as early as 8 a.m. So, you know, that I think is a really big problem. But what I was starting with, though, is sometimes people will come to a conference and they think they're going to learn, you know, everything under the sun about one particular topic, when really the point of a conference, in my opinion, is to get a wide variety of topics, tips and tricks, things to know you need to look at. But to be honest, a conference doesn't usually bring you all the answers.
Right.
You know, I mean, love conferences. We do a lot of conferences.
And again, there's workshops.
Right. Well, I was going to say, you know, the conference itself, the way to get the best out of the conference, in my opinion, is to look at the agenda beforehand, look at the schedule beforehand, pick your topics that are the most important to you. And if you end up in a session that maybe isn't what you thought, you know, have a session that you've earmarked as a secondary session, because there are some cases where you walk into a session and, you know, 10 minutes in, you kind of go, well, maybe this isn't the right session.
Right.
For me. You know, and if you're not sure, sit by a door. You know, don't be in the front row center, such that 10 minutes in, you then feel awkward getting up and leaving. So, you know, plan smart, pick your sessions, have a goal, you know, make sure that there's sessions that you really want to see, and people that you want to network with. And then you get so much more out of the conference, because you're going there with the right idea in mind. And then, of course, I really don't understand why more people don't tack on workshops, because Paul just said this too. You know, that's where you get one speaker, two speakers, like for a full day, where you get to really focus on one particular topic. And that's where you might get a lot more of your specific questions answered, especially if one of those workshops is around what you're interested in. And yes, there's a fee for those, so it's an extra cost, and it's extra days at the hotel and all of that. But
I still think it's a bargain compared to a training class.
But yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say is, you know, it's almost like you're definitely getting more bang for your buck by tacking on a few extra days at the conference and really just trying to pack in as much as you can. But it is tiring. So, you know, if you do want to party in Vegas, you know, it's one of those things. You might want to book a few shows before you get there, plan out your days, book the shows on a night before a day where maybe there isn't an 8 a.m. session that's really appealing to you or whatever, and stay an extra day afterwards.
I also think that conferences open the door to taking chances on some topics. Like, yeah, it is a buffet of ideas, right?
And, yeah, totally.
And in, you can't teach somebody something in an hour, but you can give them an idea of what the value is there so that they are willing to learn more about it.
Yeah, and a lot of speakers will list references or point to white papers. And if they don't and you're interested, you know, raise your hand and say, hey, is there another resource that I might be able to use after this event to learn more? And I can't imagine any speaker that wouldn't say, oh, you know, check out my blog and I've got some references, or check out, you know, so-and-so's white paper. And, you know, ultimately you're right. It is. It's a buffet of topics. Take some chances. Learn about some things that are kind of interesting to you. It's only an hour and 15 minutes of your time. Totally worth it. And you might actually, you know, get a direction even in your career that you didn't even intend, because it actually does excite you, you know? So that's very cool.
Yeah, and I never hesitate. I actually got to do TechEd 101 this year at TechEd US. So I was, one of the big things I say to everybody is never hesitate to leave a session that is important to you. You paid to be here. If it doesn't work for you, go somewhere else. And don't
totally
think anybody minds. We're all speakers here. We've done this. You just walk, you know, sit somewhere where you can get out gracefully, but get out.
I don't think that anyone, as far as a speaker is going to be concerned, is going to be offended if people walk out. I mean, if everybody walks out,
experienced speakers, I would say. New speakers
yeah, might be a little bit confounded by
it. That stuff.
Yeah, people walk out of Paul sessions all the time.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, he's
know
used to it now.
I had 150 people at an 8 a.m. session at Connections. I'll have.
Oh, that's a lot of love right there.
That is a lot of love. 8 a.m. Yeah. is a painful time of day. I don't do 8 a.m. sessions.
So conferences, obviously, sessions are an hour 15. Workshops are all day.
Yeah, usually like 9 to 4, 9 to 5, depends on the conference.
But that does allow you to do a kind of start to finish on a particular topic, and that's what you would expect to learn a lot of stuff about one thing.
And they tend to be more hands-on as well. Do you recommend laptop? You guys do a lot of workshops, I know. So you have laptops in your workshops for the
sometimes. We've done hands-on
workshops.
We've
done bring your own laptop a few times. It can get kind of hard because, and we don't do it anymore, because it can get hard because the attendees don't all install what they're supposed to install beforehand.
Right.
When we did it with two of us, where one of us would be talking, the other one would be doing like help desk.
Right.
And making sure everyone was set up. So we don't tend to do that anymore. But if you're coming to a workshop, I would absolutely say, yes, have a laptop. So it's an easier way to take notes than mm-hmm. having to write on the conference handouts. And it also means you can go off and look at blog posts and you can look at the white papers and stuff while the person's talking. It might be that, you know, they spend half an hour covering something that you already know about. So you go out and check out some other stuff while they're doing that.
All right. And then beyond that is full out training, 3-day and 5-day classes.
Yeah, well, a lot of local companies will offer training, so people can certainly look into that. I would have to say that they should also research reviews and opinions, and probably more than anything, they should get recommendations from their local user groups.
Yep.
So, like, go to the local user group, start to get involved in your community. That's actually another good way to learn and good way to network. and then from those, you can usually start to find out if there's a local training company that's, you know, any good. And if not, then what you might have to look at is traveling for some type of training, which can get a little bit more expensive, but there's also kind of the ROI of it, right? I mean, if you go to a local training center and maybe they're not very good and you spend 5 days there, how much of your time mm-hmm. have you lost and how much have you really gained, because you've spent money and time now for something that maybe wasn't very good. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely would recommend that people at a minimum research their local vendors and make sure that there's just really good quality, because saving, you know, travel budget to go to a local venue that's horrible is not worth it, you know. And to be honest, airfare can be reasonable these days if you can get a Saturday night stay in there, you know, and that might actually even allow you, like we were saying before, an extra day or so to experience an area that you've not been to, right? So, I mean, there's kind of tricks to make some of these expenses not so wildly expensive. Like we're doing an event in August and we've got a hotel rate that is discounted. And, you know, I sent an email. I was joking with Paul that he should call me Julie. I don't know if you remember Julie from the Love Boat.
Oh, yes.
Kind of the cruise director.
I'm not that old.
Well, yeah, Paul didn't know who I was talking about because I jokingly said, just call me Julie when I sent out this email. And I had sent out an email with about 25, I kid you not, things that the attendees could do around the Seattle area if they were coming in a day early or staying a day late. And, you know, we specifically chose August because August is one of the best times of year in, you know, as Richard and Greg, both of you live in the West Coast area, right? So we all know that, like, this is the key time to be this, you know, out this way.
Right.
So I sent about 25 sure. things that they could do and sightsee and, links to some of the evening concerts that are at a couple of the wineries around and so forth. So, you know, I guess my point is it might seem expensive to have to fly across the country. But you know, when you really add up the expenses with a decent airfare, with a Saturday stay and even 5 or 6 nights of hotel, you might be looking at $1,000, which, you know, it's a lot of money, I realize, but if you're going to pay, you know, $2,000, $3,000 for a week of training and it's not good, you know, paying an extra 25% to go, you know, somewhere where you are going to get good quality will actually be worth its, you know, worth the money. I don't know. I get a little bit frustrated when people say, you know, when are you going to teach a class in Kansas? And when are you going to teach a class in New York? And, you know, we do try to teach a lot of classes as much as we can, but, you know, we can't be everywhere all the time, and sometimes a little bit of extra expenses might be worth it.
What's something valuable about being away from home so that you can focus on the problem?
Yeah, you're disconnected from the office.
Yeah.
But even your family
and your time.
Well, and even your family and the dog and the picking up the kids from daycare. And, you know, you're right, Richard. I totally agree. That disconnect can actually allow you to really absorb more, focus more, and do some of the evening events, you know, because we've got a guest lecturer coming in one evening. We've got a SQL Server user group in the area that's one of the evenings as well. So, you know, we've got things that the attendees can do almost every night. And, you know, having said that, if it's in your hometown, that can sometimes be challenging. So you end up missing some of the extra events and some of the networking and, you know, kind of getting to meet some of the other attendees. So, yeah, I agree. That disconnection, I think, is really good.
Well, I think the other element of disconnection is just turning off your phone when you're in the
your
room.
Email.
Yeah, not allowing distractions to get to you.
Yeah, we teach a whole bunch of classes for Microsoft, and we teach on the Microsoft campus here in Redmond. And, you know, almost everybody in our classes is still hooked into email, still having to walk out at least once a day to take a phone call. Some people even have meetings scheduled during the class, and they come up and say, well, I'm sorry, I have to go to a meeting. And it's, well, I don't care. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to miss some of the class. But, you know, when you're away from home, you don't have that quite so much.
Yeah, but yeah, I also think there is an element here of choosing to shut all that stuff off. Like I'm finding now, if I actually want to get some writing done, you have to turn off your email and turn off your phone to just focus.
Yeah, you have to disconnect. You just need to isolate yourself and focus.
Yeah.
Are there other things in the classroom?
In terms of not to do?
Yeah, but things to do.
So my T-SQL Tuesday post was my top 10 things from an instructor's perspective of what not to do as a student. So I'll just read you the top 10, right? Number 10, take a phone call during class, okay?
Wait, and I've got a story on a couple of these.
All right.
I was actually in a class once where a gentleman that was 3 or 4 rows back, so they weren't, like, right in the front, but they picked up their phone, which I have no problem with. You know, if your phone rings, although I prefer that it's on vibrate.
Yep.
So if your phone
vibrates.
That's
a whole different story, those, Kimberly, and the vibrating phones, but let's not go there.
Never mind.
Anyway, I'm going to totally disregard that. So the phone rings, you know, they pick it up and say, hey, I'm in a class, hold on, and they take it outside. I have no problem with that whatsoever. But this person picked up the phone and they're like, hey, Joe, or whatever their name was. Yeah, I'm in a class right now. like with a normal speaking voice.
Oh my goodness.
Right? So after about two sentences, I kind of look at the class because he's not looking at me, right? So I kind of look at the class. We all look at this guy. We wait. He says like a couple more sentences. And I just kind of say, you know, excuse me, can you please take that outside? And he still didn't hear me. You know, so we ended up losing like a couple of minutes of class. Everybody is thinking, oh my God, what a jerk. And, you know, I don't understand what he was thinking.
Right.
You know, I mean, as far as.
He wasn't. That was the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. At least you didn't get the crazy woman that yells on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Have I told you about my cyst?
Exactly.
You got to see this thing.
All right. Moving swiftly on. Number nine. Sit at the back and do email or SERP and then ask questions. Every class I get somebody that's wrapped up in something and then we'll ask questions about something we taught like 50 minutes before.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, I really don't mind if people have to read email. I really wish that people would, like you said, turn it off and then come back later and look at email on breaks, look at email on lunch and try to stay more focused.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Number eight, persist with a tangential rat hole. So one of the things we always say is questions are fabulous, but if it's about your specific application and we're going to start looking at an ERD and how do you index this kind of stuff, we're going to take it to a break. But some people will just go on and on and on. And eventually you just have to ask them, okay, you're going to have to stop talking about that now and we'll do it at a break.
Yeah, you gotta let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Let Number it. Seven, bring your smelly lunch into the classroom. My one-line comment to explain this is, everyone will hate you.
You know, I have to admit, I actually don't mind when people bring their lunches into the classroom.
I hate it.
But yeah, you don't like sounds and smells.
Smells, yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So, but
it's amazing that I'm married to you, really.
Jeez. Yeah.
Well, and there we go.
There we go. Okay,
moving on.
Number six, and this was a controversial one that I put in, which is, come to a class where you don't understand the language it's being taught in.
Interesting.
And this is not, I don't have any problem with ESL. Okay. A lot of the people that I teach are ESL. A bunch of the people on my teams at Microsoft are ESL.
Mm-hmm. English is a second language.
English is a second language. But if you come to a class in, say, the US or the UK or Ireland where it's going to be taught in English, and, you know, after a day you come up and say, can you slow right down? Because I can't understand anything you're saying because I don't speak English. That doesn't work. Okay.
But
you've got to understand that if you're coming to a deeply technical class, you've got to be able to understand the language it's going to be taught in.
Well, and also, I mean, there's a general statement here about you're asking me to impair everybody else's
exactly.
learning.
Yeah.
You know, I have to work on the greater good here, one way or the
exactly.
other.
Yeah, and that's ultimately, we do have a lot of folks that do have ESL, you know, English as a second language issues, but they can understand the class really well. They might not be able to formulate a question
as well.
And that's
cool. That's
and
cool.
that's totally fine. Yep. And we don't have any problem with that. It's just we can't slow down for a class that we've planned for in the UK that is, you know, one day long or five days long, and we've got a set agenda.
Well, we can't really slow down at all.
Well,
right. ever.
But we do if we're
we
in
do.
China.
Say, oh, yeah. And I put a comment saying if we're in China, if we're somewhere where English is not the first language, we slow down. We are very precise in how we say things. Don't use colloquialisms, ambiguous language, stuff like that.
But that's very much the same thing as the tangential rat hole, right? Eventually, I have to focus on the greater good here. I can't work on one person's issue.
Sorry. All right. Number five, come to a class without the required experience and knowledge. So my idea here is, would you send a freshman medical student to a symposium on endovascular aneurysm repair techniques?
No, but I've also had web development classes where someone didn't know how to use a mouse.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, my other example was you go to an advanced perf tuning class on SQL Server, and the first question that somebody asks is, what's an index?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not going to happen. All right.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd even also say that you can kind of put yourself into a situation where the class is maybe a little more advanced, but take some time to like
do some pre-reading.
Read some of the folks, you know, blog posts and, you know, study up on the topic so that at least you're more aware of the jargon, the lingo, the TLAs, you know, and at least that way you'll be able to absorb a little bit more quickly.
That's also something to give you a heads up that maybe you're going to the wrong class ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you think it's going to be too challenging. All right, number four, don't take notes, okay?
No,
as a mistake.
Well, okay? Someone who doesn't take notes, that's a mistake, yes.
Yeah. So I had a class where I was teaching, and this person asked me the same question four times over the course of 3 days, and eventually some other people in the class turned around and said, you've asked that so many times, have you not written it down? And this person was not taking any notes whatsoever.
Right.
If you go to a class, especially not just a conference session, if you're going to a workshop or a multi-day class, you have to take notes. That's what the handouts are for, is to make notes on. Because there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff that the people say. Maybe they draw on the whiteboard like we do. Maybe they're not going to read all the slides. They're going to have a ton more information coming out of their mouths than just on the slides. And if you don't take notes, you're going to lose a whole bunch of that. Because it's like drinking from a fire hose going to a multi-day class. Okay, number three. Ask questions to try to make it look like you know more than the instructor.
Isn't every class got at least one?
Yeah.
Well, and I actually, over the years, have really learned that I don't know everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, and that's, ultimately, every time I teach, I learn things as well.
That's one of the cool things about teaching.
Exactly. And so, you know, I would not be surprised if somebody knew, you know, maybe a little bit more in some area that maybe I'm not as well versed. I'm fine with that. Usually the topics I'm teaching on, it's pretty hard to catch us out, but you know, it might be something tangential like BI, where they say blah, 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 and oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's totally cool. I actually don't mind that. But if somebody, you know, is surfing the web about something I'm talking about right at that point to try to see if there's some idiosyncrasy about some obscure whatever, and then they're trying to catch me out on it, it's like, you know, really, what are you trying to do here? Like, what's the point, ultimately, of rat-holing the whole class into some discussion about something that's not that critical? So it does get very, very old.
Yeah. All right, number two, argue that the instructor is wrong. Now, this is interesting because if the instructor is wrong, you need to point it out. But there's a good way to do it and a bad way to do it.
Right.
A good way to do it is, you know, in the class say, well, you know, in some scenarios, I think this might not be the right thing. And you lead into a discussion that then everybody can be happy about saying, oh, yeah, we were wrong. Rather than saying, hey, dude, you're wrong completely. Okay. So there's confrontational, non-confrontational way of doing it. And, you know, you should always call it if you do think it's wrong, but be prepared that you're wrong for calling it. Okay. And don't you know, get too frustrated or too angry or anything if it turns out that you're wrong. Okay. And again, we've had people in classes that do this all the time.
Yeah. And one of the things too is just let's take it offline. Let's research it. Let's talk about it on a break. I think there's a way, if an instructor feels threatened, that they can easily, you know, take it offline and say, let's bring it all back to a discussion after we really sort it out.
Yeah.
So instructors should also...
And a good instructor will always correct themselves in front of the class if it does turn out that they were wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole point is it's a class where everybody learns, so you don't want to impart incorrect information.
Sure. And hey, sometimes you say things wrong.
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. We all do. Kimberly does it more than most.
I think I was wrong once. No, I'm just kidding.
Probably worth pointing out that there's a difference between being right and being correct. You know, being factually correct is one thing, but being right, that includes behavior and stuff like that too, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Just because you're correct doesn't necessarily mean that you're right.
Yeah. All right. Number one, the number one cardinal sin that I see people doing when they come to classes is come to the class to find the answer.
The one right way.
The one right way. And I've got a line here that I'm going to read from my blog post, which says, a good instructor does not teach answers, but instead teaches methodologies, theory, and background information. In other words, you get taught how to find the answer, not what the answer is. Because if you're taught the answer and then next week you have another problem, how are you going to find the answer if all you got from the class was the answer to your particular problem right there? The whole point of classes is to tell you a whole bunch of information to allow you to figure out what's going wrong and how to come up to the right answer. Well, I always like to joke that for a SQL Server, the answer to every single question is, it depends,
right,
apart from one, which is, should I have auto shrink turned on? But everything else, the answer is, it depends. So how do you actually get the answer? Well, you have to know how to figure out the answer from all the different performance metrics and methodologies and so on and so on.
Well, and I think fundamentally, a lot of it is understanding how things work in SQL. I mean, Paul and I both, whenever we teach a class on performance tuning or on programming or on disaster recovery, every single class starts with internals. It starts with opening up the hood, seeing how things work, because when they break down, being able to go back and look at, you know, is it working the way that it should? And, you know, what kinds of symptoms are you having? All of that stuff, no matter what the problem is going to help you troubleshoot those problems. And so we always start with opening up the hood, looking at internals, looking at how things work. And then it's kind of ironic too, because some of our classes start at like 400 level, But then the stuff later in the week is easier because it's more 200, 300.
Because you've got the background and the building blocks.
Exactly. Yep. And that will allow you to start getting into whatever the other topics are. And it's just funny. And I think a lot of people don't do that. Or, you know, I'll say, well, you know, we could look at it this way. And then they'll say, but is this better? And it's like, well, it depends. Yeah. Sometimes that's better. Like a great example is recompilation, you know. Recompiling has a bad name in the SQL world. A lot of people say you don't want to recompile. Use stored procedures so you don't recompile, and recompilation is bad. Well, okay, I would agree that there's definitely some truth in that. If you were to recompile every line of code every time you ran it, yes, that would be bad. But there's another side to it, and that's that a compiled plan is an optimized plan.
Right.
And the way that SQL optimizes is based on the parameters being passed. And if your parameters are wildly changing the outcome of that stored procedure, there are many cases where it might actually be a bad idea to have a single plan associated with that stored procedure. So ultimately, there are certain types of code that really shouldn't have compiled saved plans. And so, you know, when somebody says, but which is better, should it always compile or should it always not compile? The answer is, well, sometimes it's good to not compile. Sometimes it's good to you know, have compiled code. So it depends. What we try to teach is what it depends on and how they can, you know, understand how to make the right decision so that they create more efficient code overall. The stuff that doesn't need to recompile, yeah, okay, let's get it in there normally. Let's make it compiled. Let's not recompile. But there are some cases where recompilation is really important. So anyway, I didn't mean to tangent on that, but that's one of the things where I get all the time,
yeah.
What's better? And, well, there is not a single answer to that.
So it's interesting, you know, when people go to a class, it's a completely different mindset you have to be in from
sure.
your day-to-day job where you're, you know, you're kind of putting out fires and dealing with meetings and so on. It's very rare that people get a chance to just sit down for a few days and absorb information. And many people, as my blog post showed, many people don't know how to do it properly. But if you can figure out and spend some time before you go to a class or a conference or a workshop and just think, how am I going to be able to sit here and absorb all this the best way? What should I do? What should I not do? You're going to get a much, much better learning experience out of it.
And it's not a problem with coming with questions. I often find folks at conferences that literally have a page of questions they want answered. But
well, that's even better.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it's very organized, mm-hmm. actually.
I wish more people would actually come up at the end of sessions and talk to us and ask questions. You know, people say, oh, we're scared to come up and say hello. We're scared to come up and ask a question. And you shouldn't be. Everybody that's at a conference, they're there because they know how to teach, to stand up and interact with people. So
and they enjoy it.
And they enjoy it, exactly.
If they didn't enjoy it, they would definitely not be doing that.
Right, because public speaking is probably the thing that people find the most terrifying.
Right.
The people that are standing up there doing it because they like it and it's their job, that's because, you know, they like it. So, you know, they're nice people. We're nice. Please come up and ask us questions. We're not gonna hurt you.
Yeah, we are the mutants, right? It was Seinfeld who did that bit on people are more afraid of public speaking than they are in death.
Oh, yeah.
So given the choice between giving the eulogy or lying in the coffin, most people would rather lie in the coffin.
which is pretty scary.
Yeah.
You know, and I was going to say, Richard, one of the things that makes courses like the master's course so successful in terms of the amount that people can absorb is that they are like sequestered 3 weeks in one location, and they are actually encouraged to get together each night and do group study. They're encouraged to get together on the weekends in between the 3 weeks that they're there to prep, but they're also, I guess, incented because they have tests every week.
Right.
Now we don't do tests at the ends of our training courses. To be honest, that could make people more more focused and
it changes the way people learn if there's a test at the end of it.
It does.
You're trying to figure out what's going to be in the test. What do I need to focus on rather than
which is good and bad.
Yeah,
you know,
bad.
I mean it might help you retain some things better for the test, but longer term retention, I'm not sure if that's
Your goal is to pass the test.
Well, and this is where we get into the problem with Microsoft certification, where people are just trained to answer the multiple choice questions well.
Yep.
not necessarily understand.
That's a whole other front.
I have very mixed feelings about training and tests in general. Tests are very
certification.
I mean, tests can really show somebody's book smarts and somebody's ability to remember facts, but they don't necessarily show somebody's troubleshooting ability,
real life experience,
and their real life experience. And so that's, you know, that's very, very hard to test. And I know that there are some test certifications that are better known for their ability to test for those kinds of things.
The Cisco one.
But at the same time, I think it's just a very challenging thing. I think that there's a lot of great folks out there that I know that are really good at troubleshooting, but they're not quote unquote certified. And I know of many people that are certified that,
I don't have any certifications at all.
No, yeah.
I have zero.
Well, okay, but let's not talk about you, because I'm not.
The difference between certified and certifiable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But there are a lot of folks out there that are certified that, you know, I'm not really sure of what their real-world troubleshooting capabilities are. I mean, there was, and I'm not trying to pick on this, it was a phenomenal goal, but wasn't there like an 11-year-old that passed like all the certification exams in one area? You know, and it's like, well, okay, you know, they might be incredibly bright and, you know, but how much real-world troubleshooting is that 11-year-old going to have? And I just don't expect that they probably had much.
There's an element of dealing with people.
Yeah, and functioning in a crisis, you know, in the IT side of the world, you know, the bigger challenge here is not doing harm while you're trying to fix things. Just, you know, thinking through the problem before you make a move.
How many times have you seen the quote-unquote right way, according to the certification, not necessarily apply directly to the real world?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, we're also struggle with the quality of the certification in the first place. Guys, I think we're about out of time.
Bummer.
What a shock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here goes.
We ran over?
I know it's confusing, but it happens sometimes.
Time flies.
It's good to talk to you. You guys have been on the road a lot lately, and it's nice to be home for a change.
We're home for 4 weeks. Then we're off on another month-long trip.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
But that one's vacation.
No rest for the wicked.
That's what they say. Kim and Paul, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks,
you're
you guys.
Welcome. Hey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And you don't want us.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to sing. Thanks very much. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.